An interview with Billy, part 2. Spiritual teaching. How did our universe and our world come into existence? The universe originated from an ancient, archetypal bang, produced by a minuscule but highly compressed, flea-sized ball of energy. Originally this energy consisted of purely spiritual energy, which created itself from within. Although even it can be traced back to an Ur-minus universe's energy conception. Ur equals is a German prefix, which means archetypal, most ancient or original in English. A universe is also called a creation or a universal consciousness and so forth, of which exist 1,039 variations. The least evolved creational form is called a creation universe, and the next higher form is an Ur-creation or Ur-universe. The one following is called a central creation or central universe, etc. The ultimate of all creational forms is the 1,039, called the Absolute Absolutum. This Absolute Absolutum was the initial creational form, which created itself from the absolute void by way of the primary Big Bang. Thereupon it embarked on its path through 1,039 different main creational forms before becoming the Absolute Absolutum. Thereafter it wafts in non-space as the highest of the highest creational forms and continues to endlessly expand and evolve through the wisdom of all creations, which unite with it once each individual creation achieves a status of being an absolute absolutum as well. Not one creational form is absolutely perfect, not even the absolute absolutum. Creational forms, just as life itself, can only achieve a relative type of perfection over their evolutionary course through processes of constant waxing and waning and waxing again that characterize all life. We live in a creation universe, a material universe, unequivocally the lowest form of a creation or universe. In our universe, our creation, universal consciousness, or whatever else people want to call it, must itself strive to work its way up the evolutionary ladder. It must evolve so as to become one with the Absolute Absolutum once it has passed through the 1,039 creational form transformations. From a human perspective, this process takes an unfathomably long time, for alone the period during which our creation, our universe, transforms into the next higher creational form, that of an Ur-creation or Ur-universe, takes more than 85 quintillion years, 85 x 1018, or 85,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, reaches the stage of our universe, respectively our creation, this our universal consciousness self-generates an idea for a new, simple creation, the type of material universe with which we are familiar. This idea or concept consists of the purest spirit energy and contains everything it needs to become self-creating for itself from within itself. From a tiny energy ball the mere size of a flea, it creates within itself new, immense energies which become highly compressed until this process culminates in a monumental explosion, the Big Bang. The energies from this explosion initially shoot outward and then expanded for fractions of a second at 107,000 times the speed of light, as they displace other universes in an effort to create its own space among the uncounted other universes, or creations, already in existence. The seven creational belts, or a universe belt, form simultaneously, of which one is the coarse matter belt, the visible matter universe. In this belt originate coarse matters and gases and dust particles from which derive meteors, suns, comets, planets, nebulae, galaxies and other things when coarse matter gathers and condenses. In this way our Earth was born. This means our universe's birth and that of our Earth, along with foreign worlds, stars and galaxies and so forth, is a creational physical energy process and has nothing to do with a creator God. These happenings are the result of purely spiritual, physical, and material physical laws and processes based upon physics and chemistry in every way and are, indeed, explainable through them. Is there a creator God in spite of this? No. No creator God exists in this sense. The Big Bang did not come about through the strength or might of one God, but did so, simply and exclusively, through spiritual and material physical as well as chemical processes, that were triggered and directed by a young universal consciousness, respectively creation. The term God has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the creation of the world or the universe, stars, galaxies and the like, for the expression God has existed in the vastness of the universe for billions of years, from ancient times to the present, and it represents nothing more than the title of a person. Initially this title was Ishwish, which means God when translated into our languages. But Ishwish, respectively God, is nothing more than another term for King of Wisdom. It is a purely human title assigned to humans who were particularly knowledgeable, wise, and who possessed great mastery in everything. This term's significance, however, was distorted and falsified by humans on Earth, particularly by the early religions and those experienced in profiting from using the word. The result was that God, as a king of wisdom, was removed and the people turned him into a creator god who, allegedly, had created the earth, the sun and outer space. Numerous individuals, such as Jehovah and many others, even claimed of themselves to be creator gods with the consequence that they were also revered and worshipped. One thing led to another and soon the original meaning of the word God was forgotten and, consequently, the purported creator gods were able to victoriously march into the realm of the people's religions, sects and faiths. What is creation? What does this term supposedly mean? Basically, creation is the entire universe, the universal consciousness, the largest force and energy humans can ever imagine. And creation is also the entire energy and consciousness of every life form in existence, bar none. In its most archetypal form, creation is the purest spirit energy, although it can display countless other forms of energy in its external manifestations, which range from the finest to the coarsest matter. As creation, this all-encompassing energy embodies every level and sphere, including the being of the spirit as well as the material existence. As a universe, creation remains the highest energy form and the highest act of consciousness capable of evolution. Its flawless laws and directives have unequivocal validity at every level of existence and spirit form throughout the entire universe. Creation is the mightiest power and energy of this universal creational existence, and it has no human equivalent. More than everything, it is not even the most infinitesimal shred of an iota in common with the man-made creator God who disappears into an abyss of limitless absurdity when compared with creation, its strength, and its mastery. What role does creation play in our human lives and that of all the others? Creation plays a very significant role in human evolution and that of all other life, for every life form carries within it a minute piece of creation, which provides life to all life. Without this minute particle of creational spirit, not one single life form would exist, for this creational spirit is the actual, fundamental life energy. This life energy, in turn, however, is dependent upon the comprehensive totality of creation itself, which disperses a fine energy form known as cosmic life energy throughout the entire universe. The minute particles of creational spirit absorb and are given life by this cosmic life energy. One could almost say that this cosmic life energy acts as creational sustenance on which all particles of creational spirit subsist. To this end, every life form is dependent upon creation. And yet, it provides no mandate on how humans, for instance, should shape, lead or live their lives. Through its laws and directives, creation merely establishes its goal of evolution and its related proviso. Indeed, the goal is that humans greatly evolve and develop themselves, spiritually as well as consciously, to their highest level of perfection, relatively speaking. In so doing, they may join creation in the future and become one with it. And therefore they help creation to evolve as well. While creation does not dispense conditions to any life form, and every entity is free to live and do as it pleases, there are laws, directives, and guidelines provided which state that according to the law of causation, certain lifestyles will result in certain consequences. This law demonstrates that every action results in a specific reaction. It is, therefore, a creational natural fact that every life form can live as it wishes, that it can make its own decisions, and that it can adapt itself, one way or the other, into the laws and directives. Depending on the type of life a particular life form leads, makes for itself, and lives, the result is very specifically consequential in this life form, especially the human one, is responsible in every way for its actions. The creational natural laws and directives are based upon the positive and negative factors, and for this reason is everything within the entire universe subject to these parameters. And since creation itself, known also as nature, does not dispense any type of conditions as to how a way of life should be fashioned, led and lived, the individual life form, hence all human beings, must therefore fully accept their own, full responsibility for their actions. Every human, therefore, makes his or her own decision whether he or she wants to live according to the creational natural laws and directives to the extent that they bring him or her benefit and advancement, or whether he or she wants to transgress against the laws and suffer the detrimental consequences. This also means that creation bears no responsibility whatsoever for any human action. Humans alone are responsible for each and everything they do, regardless of what they think, feel, concoct, do and undertake. Please define such creational natural laws and directives, recommendations, in concrete terms. For instance, one of the most significant laws states that the errors humans commit should not be condemned, because only by committing errors can humans evolve. Hence, humans can learn from the mistakes they make. After committing mistakes, they will eventually recognize this fact, reflect on them, and remedy their errors. And, as a rule, they will become more knowledgeable and will refrain from making the same mistakes again, at least not in the identical ways. And thus they make progress. This also signifies that humans must thoroughly reflect on all matters so as to recognize where they are prone to making mistakes and to gather new knowledge, which will lead them to success and advancement. Success and advancement will be achieved by pensive thought, and this is another important creational natural law without which any evolution is impossible. A law, therefore, is an established and irrevocable rule which, when implemented and followed, prevents the life form from experiencing harm of any kind. A directive, by contrast, is a mere recommendation which guides the person in a specific direction where some initiative should be taken or disregarded and, as a consequence, something good or bad, respectively something positive or negative, will occur. The following recommendations represent such creational natural directives: you shall not kill in depravity. You shall not violate your covenant with creation. You shall not steal or expropriate from others. You shall not blaspheme the truth, and so forth. How did human beings on Earth originate? Did they really evolve from the ape? The purely terrestrial man, the one who truly originated on Earth, is a natural product of the Earth's planetary evolution. First came the most primitive forms of flora, the lichen and the like, which exuded material that transformed into amino acids. These, in turn, generated new compounds from which higher plants originated that also embarked on the path of evolution. Ultimately, additional amino acid compounds derived from this process and resulted in yet higher life forms, such as fauna, the animal kingdom. all continued to develop and were subject to this waxing and waning process just as the plants were. They lived and died, and from their remains and subsequent mutations/transformations, still newer amino acid compounds and such resulted, which ultimately led to the humanoid life form, the human lineage. These beings were not a purely human race at the beginning, but were a form from which several lineages could develop, and this is precisely what transpired. The first humanoid life form split into several species from which developed the humanoid life form as well as other distinct classifications. However, the base lineage was initially human. Through evolutionary processes it slowly transformed to the point where fundamental differences began appearing. While the purely animalistic life forms continued the development of their own species, the humanoid life forms separated. One line continued its evolution as the human form in the natural, predominant form. The others split into various species from which the ape being came into existence with a multitude of variations. And yet, variations emerged even among these archetypal human beings, and one can actually say that several human races existed even at this early stage of development. This, then, contradicts Darwin's theory, since man did not derive from the apes, but that the apes derived from man and are byproducts of the ancient, archetypal human evolution. To date, how long has terrestrial man existed? If this question refers to the original, genuine terrestrial human being, his age goes beyond 4.5 million years. If, on the other hand, the question refers to those humans on Earth who came to our world from the depths of the universe, then their age lies somewhere between 6 and 12 million years. These particular human beings who inhabited the Earth are the so-called distant travelers from the depths of the universe. Their home worlds were far from here in an alien galaxy, which has since disappeared and gone the way of all temporal things. The majority of these distant travelers from the depths of the universe who colonized the Earth and interbred with the purely terrestrially born beings came from the lineage of Enoch Enoch. He was the founder of the various peoples who came from a distant galaxy into our Milky Way and settled in the regions of the Sirius constellation, from which they had to flee after living there for a long time. As persecuted runaways, they found refuge in our Sol system, where they began inhabiting Mars, Phi Eton, and our Earth. Is it true that humans have more than one life? That is correct. Humans are subject to the law of reincarnation. Hence, they are born again. This also applies to all other life forms that possess both a consciousness and a spirit form capable of evolving. Therefore, when human beings die, their spirit form leaves their physical bodies in the current realm and crosses over into the spiritual realm of the beyond, where the spirit form rests and learns until it is able to reincarnate into another material body. The purpose for having reincarnation and numerous lives is to allow both the human spirit form, which is part of creation, and the comprehensive consciousness to evolve to the point where together they enter into and become one with creation, which itself evolves at the same time. This constant process of reincarnation facilitates the evolution of the person's spirit and the comprehensive consciousness, from which the individual's actual personality and the actual consciousness originate. Many lifetimes are necessary, and so are the reincarnations, respectively rebirths, to bring the spirit to its fullest capacity of knowledge, wisdom, harmony, etc., so it may later attain the highest possible perfection. Relatively speaking, it would be absolutely impossible to develop the spirit, or spirit form, to such a level of relative perfection in merely one single lifetime. In fact, many millions of lifetimes and reincarnations are required to achieve this goal of perfection. Just to free themselves from the physical human body in order to enter the purely bodiless spirit world takes human beings somewhere between 60 and 80 million years, which is 6 to 7 times longer than what terrestrial scientists claim is the age of the universe. Something else must be clarified. Absolutely erroneous and inaccurate are those views and teachings which assert and declare that the human being is able to reincarnate as an animal, for instance. The fact is, humans are always reborn as humans because of the creational particle within each of them that is capable of evolving. Humans, therefore, can never reincarnate as animals or anything else except as human entities. And what's more, as a rule, they always do so in accordance with their race, although, naturally, it is possible for deviations to occur. But such events only occur in special circumstances. To address these issues now would, however, take too much time. By the same token, animals can never be reborn as humans because the animal's spirit form is neither focused in this direction nor is it intended to evolve toward knowledge and wisdom, as is the case with human spirit forms or the spirit, respectively. Regarding the topic of reincarnation, mention is often made of karma. Just what is karma? The term karma has come to represent some faulty teachings, just as the Christian term atonement has. According to the karma teachings, man is supposed to bear the burdens of his past life in the next life. Therefore, the individual's subsequent life would be governed by how good or evil the person was in the previous life. If you analyze this concept, it means the individual will be either rewarded or punished in the next life for deeds in the past life. In other words, karma implies the person's type of rebirth as linked to actions in the former life, and that current fate is the result of past life actions. According to this, karma simply means that someone's present fate is predetermined by the deeds in a former life. According to Christian teachings, atonement boils down to punishment or reward after death at Judgment Day. Simply stated, you will get to heaven as long as you are gullible and meek, and as long as you obey the rules and edicts of the Christian religion or its sects. But those who disobey all of this will wind up in hell or a purgatory, or will suffer eternal damnation, with no chance whatever of understanding or remedying their errors. But the real truth portrays a totally different picture from that being presented through the karma and sin/atonement teachings. For humans to evolve and become more knowledgeable and wise, they have no option other than to make mistakes. Through mistakes, as a rule, humans tend to suffer some harm and, thus, punish themselves, if one wants to define it as such. But through the harm they suffered, they have already atoned for their mistake and will, subsequently, make an effort to remedy their mistake and the resulting harm associated with it. In so doing, humans learn a lesson from this situation and become more cognizant. This is the simplest principle of cause and effect, or action and reaction. And this precise situation helps humans evolve and elevate their knowledge, understanding, abilities and the like. As a consequence, they will attain a higher level of consciousness, which their comprehensive consciousness will carry forth into the next life, into their next reincarnation. Therefore, in their next life, humans will benefit from the fruit of their former life's progress and higher level of consciousness, without having been weighed down by some burden or non-burden from previous lives. Thus, the next new life is not based on the burdens or non-burdens of the previous life, since they were completely conquered during the former lifetime, either in positive or negative ways. Not only would it be unjust, but it would actually be contrary to the creational laws if elements from a former life were to be carried over into the current one. That it should be so, as the religions teach it so irrationally, is pure nonsense, which simply exemplifies the illogical human thinking, contemplations and endeavors. In their lust for revenge, humans always call for punishment and atonement in every case. By contrast, creation knows nothing of this demeanor. It knows nothing of the revenge, punishment, and atonement that humans are so familiar with, and for this reason creation has never created any such laws. There are people who claim they died and saw the beyond. Is it true that this really happens? Not in this sense. The people you speak of were not really dead. They may have been clinically dead, which means they no longer had discernible heart or brain activity. But, as I said, this is only a clinical death, at which time the spirit form has not yet left the body, but still remains in it for a while. This means the comprehensive consciousness also stays in the physical body, although all vital signs may appear to be shut down. The comprehensive consciousness and the spirit form continue to remain with the body for a certain period, which may last for seconds, minutes or hours. Indeed, under certain circumstances even years or decades. The latter, for instance, is the case for the survival of bodies that have been frozen instantly through cryology, during which time the consciousness continues to function. Such a condition, however, only occurs while the body is in its death throes. And for this reason the brain's activity is no longer detectable, even though it continues to function. At this time images appear that are consistent with the individual's normal thinking and imagination patterns, but the images are as well imprinted by the comprehensive collective of the terrestrial human entities. While in this condition of profound death agony, these people are often capable also of emitting their consciousness, whereby they can suddenly view themselves from the outside, while hovering above their own bodies and so forth. Light, darkness, and beloved people also frequently play a major role in this scenario, and the person in this stage of a death throe feels him or herself being led through dark channels and such into a light, from where they do not ever want to leave again. Can someone contact the beyond and those who are dead? No. As a rule, this is impossible. People who claim the opposite, in spite of what I have said here, and should related things emerge, such incidents are not truths but are big deceptions instead or self-deceit and events that either belong into the realms of the stored record levels, charlatanries or fraud. When events are considered that are part of the stored record levels, the so-called Akashic Records, then the following holds true: every human being's thoughts, articulations, feelings or emotions, stirrings, impulses and the like, are deposited in the Akashic Records, the storage area in a terrestrial hyperspace. Anyone who can generate the frequencies identical to those of the deposited information with his or her thoughts, consciousness or some technology, will also be able to summon these frequencies. This implies that information that belongs to living individuals, even those who are dead, may be retrieved from the stored records as long as the person finds the specific frequencies of the other individuals. It is even conceivable that a form of logical communication can be initiated with stored impulses and information in the Akashic Records. Such communication is possible with deposited forms of comprehensive consciousness in the beyond. But this is extremely rare and should not be misconstrued as a person being capable of speaking with the departed. While in the beyond, the comprehensive consciousness, which is capable of reincarnating only as long as it remains with that particular spirit form, is, therefore, under certain circumstances, able to have contact with living persons. Such a situation is exceedingly rare and is not related to those communicators with the dead who refer to themselves as mediums. On one hand, happenings taking place with mediums who allegedly are able to speak with the dead are simply based on their ability to tap into and retrieve information from the stored records, respectively the Akashic Records. On the other hand, however, and this is the most prevalent form, certain individuals do have the capability, while in trance, to link up with the various forms of some living terrestrial subconsciousness and to communicate with them. Such forms of the subconsciousness are part of the terrestrial human comprehensive subconsciousness composite, and they can divulge information about the fact that life continues to exist after death, since they, the subconsciousness forms, also possess this information and know about reincarnation and other things. This means that these forms of subconsciousness are capable only of divulging knowledge with which they are familiar, Frequently this encompasses more knowledge than the person is aware of while in a wakeful state. These forms of subconsciousness, which are also linked with the stored record levels, may quite possibly be imprinted with the personality and divulge information that is merely stored in the record banks and may be a secret for the individual. The terms channeling and medium are part of this contacting the beyond topic. What are we to think of them? Individuals who possess the unique ability to link with a transcendental sphere are called mediums. True mediums are very rare indeed. And there exist by far not as many as one might assume, since countless people on earth have come forth claiming they are genuine mediums. But the truth is that the majority of such claims are based purely on lies, deceit and fraud, on psychopathic self-deception, schizophrenia or a multitude of delusions. According to reliable information from higher spiritual levels, there are 16 genuine mediums on earth. But they do not cater to the general public. They neither advertise nor reap financial profits or otherworldly gains with their special skills. We can, therefore, exclude all of these countless mediums with regard to the authenticity of their talents when they go public to accumulate financial gains or profits with their seances, seminars, books, lectures, shows and the like. The same holds true of the channelers. To comment further would be redundant except for this one thought: with real mediums no religious aspects are involved, as is the case with so many phony mediums and channelers, who simply overflow with religious sectarian considerations, phraseologies, warnings, demands of humility, threats and the like. Through these factors they clearly reveal their own religious sectarian dependency, which can no longer be ignored. Many people believe they are guided or protected by a guardian angel, a spirit guide, by God or some other higher power, by saints or by Jesus Christ. Is that possible? Not at all. In each and every case, the individual person is always the only one responsible for his or her thoughts, feelings, emotions, actions and so forth. It is only the different religions and sects which claim that God or saints and guardian angels or Jesus Christ are guiding and bearing the responsibility for the human being's fate. But such claims are nothing more than religious sectarian delusions that are busily prodded by the head honchos of the religions and sects, so that they can place people under their spell, bind their followers to them, and financially deplete and exploit them in every possible way. There is no creator God as the religions and sects proclaim, for the truth reveals only creation exists, which, as the universal consciousness, created the entire universe and everything within it, including all life forms of which humans are but one. And creation does not demand anything from us humans, and it bears no responsibility whatever for anything humans think or do. The most important factor is that humans are personally responsible for each and everything they do, and humans must always bear the responsibility and experience the consequences for their own actions, regardless of what they think, perpetrate or effect. However, this also signifies that humans are absolutely independent and totally their own masters in every way. No higher power is there to protect them, not a spirit guide. Not Jesus Christ, not God, saints, guardian angels, nor any other archetypes and the like. Each and every one of these personages is the product of religions and sects, invented and generated to divert humans from the path of the genuine truth, and to make them believe that as humans they are not self-reliant but ever dependent upon a higher powers. This condition transpired even in the earliest of times to keep humans enslaved, to prevent them from rebelling, and to subordinate them meekly and humbly into this oppression. What should one say to all those people who believe in one God or even several gods, along with some saint, guardian angels and the like? Our teaching of the truth is not directed toward destroying religions and sects or some other faith of people, and so we live by the rule of tolerance and refrain from proselytizing. Therefore, Never would we approach religion or sect members to convert them to our teaching. Our motto is that everyone must be allowed to believe what he or she wants to in religion or knowledge matters. So, if someone trusts in a god or a guardian angel and the like, we do not attempt to change the person's opinions about his or her belief system. We only mediate when people approach us to inquire about our teaching and the knowledge we possess. Only in this way will we impart information. Although we do not prose light, our task nonetheless is to disseminate the truth about religions and sects. But we do so exclusively through our written material, which we disseminate or sell to interested parties who have come to us voluntarily without us ever pestering them as missionaries. And, of course, we provide all of those seeking the truth with the desired, pertinent answers and explanations to their questions. Naturally, these replies are geared to what our teaching defines, namely, that one must never simply believe but that one must be cognizant and observant of the truth. Everyone who is interested must be told that believing makes a person dependent, if not to say addicted, and often leads to fanaticism. This condition, in turn, stifles freedom of thought, indeed it inhibits and destroys it. For people to be completely free, they must have access to freedom of thought with which to make all personal decisions, without having to fear that the sword of Damocles of some allegedly loving, but in reality punitive and therefore revengeful God, is suspended above their heads and could drop on them. People must be free so they can completely make all their decisions within the parameters of their own responsibility and then act accordingly without having to first ask some God, protective spirit, Jesus Christ or others for permission or for a judgment on whether some issue is good or evil as these imaginary figures, supposedly, are in charge of laying down the standards for which they allegedly bear the responsibility. The truth is that in each and every case, humans must always bear their own responsibility, and this applies to all of their thoughts, feelings, contemplations and endeavors. Consequently, they must inwardly determine how good or bad or how negative or positive something is. Humans need absolute freedom of thought and judgment even for making these decisions, without being commanded by imaginary powers or being interfered with in some form or other in the human avenues of freedom and decision-making. As a result, humans must fully understand what the truth is and must possess this knowledge, so as to make the correct personal decisions. And yet, it is precisely this knowledge the religions and sects smother and withhold from the people. Knowledge is synonymous with power, and this is exactly what religions and sects want to cling to for themselves and thereby exploit the situation to make a profit from it. Humans who are deprived of knowledge fall prey to religions and sects and are turned into meat puppies as they lose their freedom of thought and decision-making along with their freedom in general. This predicament leads to an intolerance toward other people, the other's lifestyle and modes of thinking, and the hoodwinked believers become bogged down in a rut of doctrines and can only see red when their own doctrines are critically evaluated by people of another faith or by individuals with different opinions. However, tolerance among and between people is essential if we hope to live and exist in a world of love and harmony. To this end, we don't need any form of belief structure, we only need to know the truth and certainty that by nature and inside of creation's omnipotence, all human beings are created equal regardless of what and how they are, regardless of their race, skin color or nationality, whether they are rich or poor, or whether they are Christians, Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, Confucians, or belong to some freaky sect. The year 2000 is approaching. Is the end of the world close at hand as many doomsday preachers of various sects claim? This is pure nonsense. Just as the world did not come to an end in the year 1000 because of a godly judgment, neither will this occur in 2000 nor in 3000 and so forth. Doomsday prophets even existed in ancient times, as have fearful believers in such charlatanry, including the Christian Church and its Bible, with threats of an end to the world, Judgment Day, and the like. No wonder, then, many Christian sects and their head honchos constantly threaten their followers with prophecies of a world that allegedly is coming to an end. A particularly popular time for such doomsday prophecies by some of the crazies and their faithful followers are turns in the millennium or a century. Hence, those times when there is a change from one millennium or century to another. Should the earth come to an end or be destroyed at precisely such a time through a gigantic meteorite, for instance, or a comet from outer space, such a catastrophe would be nothing more than a cosmic event which certainly would have nothing to do whatsoever with the revenge or judgment of an imaginary creator God or his alleged son, Jesus Christ. And if humans, in their military or scientific lust for destruction, permit the earth to end or be destroyed, this, too, would not be equivalent to the vengeful doomsday act of a god. Many people who are reading this interview document will probably be asking themselves how you can be certain that everything is really as you say. They will claim what you say is just as much a matter of belief, as is the faith in religions. How do you respond to such people? Nobody is obliged or mandated to take my words seriously or to accept them as true. As a rule, people should simply not believe things or statements and the like presented to them, not even what I convey or explain to them. To merely believe is to be dependent and stupid, and for this reason people should never believe anything. On the contrary, people should always be critical, ponder, and consider everything in a thorough manner through investigations and research to find the truth on their own, externally and within themselves. This requires reasoning, healthy criticism, and complete freedom of thought, as well as impartiality and a lack of prejudice and total neutrality. When all of these things are present, people can investigate everything, and with a base of actual facts, they become cognizant of the real truth. Cognizance of the truth through actual investigation that provides reliable facts through researching all aspects, can then produce effective results which have nothing whatsoever to do with the acceptance of a belief. Within the factuality of the truth, no room remains for belief. There is only room for actual reality, and this actual reality gives me the certainty that the truth is really correct, and that it is the same truth which can be ascertained in creation's nature and in every one of its laws and directives by those with open senses and an open mind to watch, observe, research, and investigate everything put before them. Of course, there are the know-it-alls who deny this truth simply out of principle or because of their own image/status. However, one can only feel sorry for such individuals because they live adjacent to the truth and do not participate in the real life. Others deny this truth for religious or strictly sectarian reasons. But every rationally thinking person knows that even in this case such individuals exist without being a part of real life. Where did you get your vast amount of knowledge? From my earliest childhood onward, I had to study, always study, to improve my knowledge. Even before I started going to school, I was instructed by an extraterrestrial called Sfoth, who taught me countless things and facts, including the creational natural laws and directives. Sfoth was an Ishwish, a man who held the title King of Wisdom, which in terrestrial languages means God. He instructed me in a normal way, face to face, as well as through hypnosis-inducing devices. From these gadgets, an incredible variety of topics, data, and other knowledge was transmitted to me. In this way I became knowledgeable and learned in countless things, but soon this led to the point where I became a lonely child, seeking only the company of adults, such as my teacher and a lovable priest. Prior to completing my official school years, Sfoth occasionally brought me to the vicinity of Darjeeling, India, in the Himalayas. An old Buddhist monk lived there who also instructed me in many disciplines, as did several other monks when I had occasion to live in India. Yet, I always studied on my own initiative and did so even later in life, when a female extraterrestrial named Ascot came to Earth from our parallel universe, called the Dal Universe, to instruct me. Let's now return to the beginning of our conversation. What is the true purpose of our life? The purpose of our life is for us to evolve, the advancement and continued development of our being at a constant pace to ever higher levels. The purpose of evolution lies within the concept of achieving the highest possible human development, including love, harmony, ability, knowledge and wisdom. Evolution not only serves to bring human entities to a high level of knowledge and wisdom so they may lead a life in harmony with creation's laws and directives and the like, through our evolution we also assist creation with its own evolution. Just as humans and nearly all life is in need of evolutionary advancement, so, too, is creation, the universal consciousness. Even creation is only relatively perfect, and it must evolve to ascend to higher forms of its own existence. And to achieve its objective, creation requires human beings who evolve over the course of billions of years into pure spirit forms and from these into still higher forms of existence, extending through to the petal level. There occurs the transition into creation, into the universal consciousness, and transpires the unification, the becoming one. In this manner creation assimilates these former human spirit forms, which have by then evolved to their own highest level and which, initially, had originated from creation in order for it to evolve through these human entities. During their unification with creation, all the accumulated knowledge and wisdom are also absorbed by creation, and thus it elevates its own evolution by a fraction of an iota, and advances some time later into the next higher creation level. After an incredibly long time, this subsequent creation continues evolving until it becomes one with the Absolute Absolutum. The Absolute Absolutum is the highest level an all-encompassing form of creation can attain, and yet even the Absolute Absolutum must continue its evolution process into all great time and chronological endlessness. What advice do you give someone for whom religions no longer provide satisfactory answers? What should the person do? When such a person, as well as others, who are not affiliated with any religions or something similar, cannot find satisfactory answers regarding the meaning of life, they only have to search for the truth within themselves and to actually find it. In doing so, they generate a significant knowledge that is pertinent and truthful, and they do not have to accept the false teachings of others, nor do they have to believe and lose themselves in what these religious zealots tell them. The principle of, he who seeks will find, applies here. But one must ensure that only those individuals find the right and good material who are truly searching for it and making great efforts, for the real truth is not as easily found as those falsities offered and sold as truths by the religions and sects, although they are nothing but erroneous teachings in reality, intended and aimed at making others dependent on the religion/sects. Keeping the people under control and exploiting them. It is unfortunate, but many have found the wrong path to religions which, from ancient times on, have been known as the opium of the masses, since religion clouds the faculty of the people. As a result, these people can no longer discern reality and truth, and they lose every bit of self-responsibility that is so urgently needed to lead a good, well-balanced, and creationally naturally appropriate life. Isn't a person, as an individual, powerless nowadays? Looking at all the wars and the misery on earth, one might ask just what tangible action the individual can take. The individual can do quite a bit, mainly for him or herself, since the person is, in each and every case, closer to his or her own self than to anyone else. Therefore, the person must primarily be concerned with his or her formation and evolution, and with staying alive, of course. This, however, must take place in a way that concurs with the creational natural laws, and it is imperative that the individual always bears fully his or her own responsibility for each and every thought, endeavor, emotion, perception, contemplation, action, etc. Every individual must work on him or herself and become a real human being, for it all begins with the individual, and all humanity consists of individuals. When an individual becomes a decent, rational and responsible person, the result rubs off on the next person who may then, perhaps, also become more decent, rational and responsible before, in turn, conveying these attributes to the following person, and so forth. The great human mass cannot be changed, nor will the great human mass change for the better, but it is the individual who will change. And as a group they will carry their new ways, their knowledge, love, harmony, peace, and sense of responsibility into the world to the person next to them and the one beyond that. Eventually the whole thing begins to snowball. Therefore the question is not whether the individual can do anything or whether he/she is powerless. Instead we must ask, why aren't individuals doing something? It is really up to the individual to remedy and change the world's ills for the better. First and foremost, such actions are based on the premise that individuals reevaluate and work on themselves so as to turn into genuine human beings, and this can come about only when they discover the truth. Once the truth is discovered and the individual actually has become a genuine human being, he or she can do much outwardly, by gathering up all available courage and by standing up for the truth, a better life, a better world, and better contemplations and endeavors for all humanity. This includes such things as campaigning against overpopulation, against discrimination of women and the abuse of children, against torture and capital punishment, and the hatred against foreigners and other races. It also includes campaigning for the protection of animals, nature, our environment and planet Earth. Ultimately, of course, this also includes lending a helping hand to one's fellow man whenever this is possible and appropriate. Nothing can be expected from the human mass, for it is obstinately living in its same old indifference and egotistical rut. That's why it is up to the individual to change his or her own ways and to become accessible to the truth. In so doing, he or she draws his neighbor and that neighbor's neighbor toward the truth as well. This is the only method in existence whereby an individual can change all of humanity toward a better way of life and to maintain life and the world.